Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona, Friday, September 23rd. Hello again, Orion Samuelson checking in with you this week, and we'll be covering several areas, but focusing on what happened after the Fed meeting. Nothing really, but we'll talk a little bit more about that, and of course we'll talk agricultural markets with Brian Basting of Advanced Trading based in Bloomington, Illinois. And then the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, Mike Conaway, will join Patrick Haggerty, our man in Washington, to look back over the session of Congress just coming to an end a little bit later this year and see what happened agriculturally on Capitol Hill. So, a lot to talk about, as always, but let's begin by checking the closing prices on Wall Street today. For the week, the Dow went up 0.75%, the S&P 500 gained 1.2%, and the NASDAQ gained 1.1%. That's what happened on Wall Street, but of course all eyes were on the Fed chair, Janet Yellen, and as pretty much expected, the Fed left the interest rate alone, no change. The world didn't end. We got a pretty good reaction. But then today, as we ended the week, that action sort of faded away. And it was a day of red screens on Wall Street and in the commodity world. But Wall Street closed lower today as lower oil prices weighed on energy shares. And then from the technology area, the tech giants Facebook and Apple declined, although major indices, as we said, still ended the week higher. But today, energy was the worst performing of the major S&P sectors. Oil prices tumbled about 4% on signs that Saudi Arabia and Iran were making very little progress in achieving agreement ahead of talks by crude exporters aimed at freezing production. And that OPEC meeting will be coming up next week. But Facebook shares down 1.7% and were one of the biggest drags on the S&P 500 today. The Wall Street Journal reported the social media company overestimated viewing time as much as 60 to 80% for the video ads they run on Facebook. And that, of course, has an impact on how much money they can charge for the commercials that they run on Facebook. And the S&P 500, best weekly performance in more than 2 months. Of course, the big gain on the S&P 500 came Wednesday and Thursday after the Fed decided to keep interest rates steady. And that left intact the low-rate environment that has helped fuel the bull market. Today, Twitter shares jumped 20% amid reports that the microblogging company was exploring selling itself. It came through a rather bad year from a financial standpoint, and so that made news in the market today. Endo International shares jumped 15%. That's the biggest percentage gainer on the S&P after the drug maker announced a new chief executive. So ended the week on Wall Street down, and so on Monday we'll start with the Dow Industrial Average at 18,261 after losing 131 points today. The S&P 500 index dropped 12 points today. It ended at 2164. The NASDAQ composite down 33 points, ending the week at 5305. And VIX, that's the Market Volatility Index at the CBOE, gained a little more than 0.25% today, and will start trading Monday at 12:20. Now, let's take a look at what's ahead next week. Federal Reserve officials are going to have a very busy week, beginning with Fed Reserve Chair Janet Yellen, who gives her annual semi-annual testimony on Federal Reserve supervision and regulation of the financial system. before the House Financial Services Committee on Wednesday, and then on Thursday, she'll do the same for the Senate Committee. So she'll be busy on Capitol Hill. But don't even have time to go through the list of appearances by other governors of the Federal Reserve Board. But they are going to be very busy on the speaking circuit next week. And so that will give some pause probably to Wall Street, because whenever any of the Fed governors talk, Wall Street pays attention. Now, the earnings report season pretty well over, but there are some big companies reporting next week that will get a lot of attention. Nike, the world's largest footwear maker, expected to report an increase in first quarter revenue on Tuesday, driven by demand for running footwear and athletic apparel. And Nike has seen continued growth in Asia Pacific, while North American sales have been rather quiet. PepsiCo will release third quarter results on Thursday. The beverage maker expected to have had strong snack sales in the quarter, particularly of its premium and healthy brands, including Quaker Breakfast Flats and Simply Tostitos Black Bean Chips. And so we'll be watching that PepsiCo release come Thursday of this week. Also, Accenture, the provider of consulting and outsourcing services, expected to report fourth quarter results on Thursday. And on that same day, Costco Wholesale Corporation plans to release its fourth quarter results. And the warehouse club retailer reported a 2% increase in fourth quarter sales. However, profit could be hurt by grocery price deflation and the company phasing out the sale of tobacco. We start the week on Monday with Carnival Corporation, the world's largest cruise ship operator, expected to report an increase in its revenue for the third quarter, the period when Carnival makes most of its annual earnings as higher ticket pricing helps sales. Some of the reports we'll be getting next week: single-family home sales likely, according to analysts, dropped 8.8% in August, falling to an annual rate of 600,000 units. And in addition to that, we'll get reports on the final estimate for the second quarter from the Commerce Department on the gross domestic product. And on Thursday, it's expected the Commerce Department will report an increase of 1.3% in the gross domestic product. A report from the National Association of Realtors expected to show its pending home sales index based on contracts signed last month remained unchanged in August. And on Wednesday, data from the Commerce Department likely to show that non-defense capital goods orders, excluding aircraft, that's a closely watched proxy for business spending plans, down 0.1% in August. And finally, on Friday, we end the week with a look at consumer spending, which accounts for more than 2/3 of the U.S. economic activity. Analysts are saying that probably went up about 0.2% in August. So there indeed will not be a lot of reports next week, but we'll be busy interpreting. Meanwhile, if you're looking for a part-time job, it looks like the holiday hiring season will be about the same as a year ago. The latest one to report, Macy's said it would hire about 83,000 temporary workers for the holiday quarter, the third major retailer after Kohl's and Target to keep seasonal hiring largely unchanged from last year. Macy's, which operates the namesake Macy's and Bloomingdale's department store chains, had hired 85,000 temporary workers for last year's holiday shopping season, and that was down about 1,000 from the year before. But again, with FedEx and UPS and department store retailers, there'll be a lot of part-time jobs available going into the holiday season. Google may have to write a check for $400 million to Indonesia. That word came out this week as Indonesia said it plans to pursue Alphabet's Google for 5 years of back taxes, and the search giant could face a bill of more than $400 million for 2015 alone if it has been found to have avoided payments. We did get some stories on the health of the housing industry this week. The housing starts fell more than expected in August as bad weather disrupted building activity in the South, but a solid increase in permits for single-family dwellings suggested that demand for housing did remain intact. And a couple of other events, home builder Lennar posted its slowest order growth in over a year. Well, we're going to talk commodity markets, and we'll be joining Brian Basting in the studio when we continue here on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need, today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Joining us in the studio this week is Brian Basting of Advance Trading. That's based in Bloomington, Illinois. And that's McLean County, Illinois, Brian, which for years was the leader in corn production and soybean production. Now soybean production county is Cass County, North Dakota, isn't it?
Yeah.
So anyway, as you take a look at that part of Illinois, what's happening?
Very active corn harvest, Orion. One of the most active corn harvests we've seen in recent years. The corn has matured quickly because of the very warm nights we've seen this summer. It's drying down quickly, and farmers are really going after the corn right now very aggressively.
What kind of moisture are we looking at?
I think it's anything high teens, low 20s, very, very harvestable, for lack of a better word, but not an issue there at all.
One of the areas in Illinois we always look at is Racehorse Flats in Decatur, Illinois. Are they doing pretty good yields there from what you've heard?
You bet. They've really got off to a good start here. Here's some very good corn yields down there. Corn yields that in some cases rival or even surpass 2014. Now, it's a little early yet. I don't want to read too much into that, but it certainly is off to a great start.
And I keep hearing from farmers who say, it's not a record crop till it's in the bin. And we're looking at some rather wet forecasts, and we've certainly seen it this past week over the northern part of the belt. Any major concern on the part of farmers or the companies that take in the grain?
At this time of year, weather is everything, as you and your listeners know. So when you look at those issues that have confronted southeast Minnesota, a lot of Wisconsin, northeast Iowa, some really challenging issues there with harvest. So anytime that crop is ready, guys are ready to go and go get that corn and beans when it's ready, because anytime you get into some wet weather, all bets are off. So I think right now there's not a real concern. They're going to go after the corn when it's ready. But I know your listeners up in northern Illinois had some rain here this week. They may be slowed for a bit.
And Reuters used, I thought, interesting language this week when they talked about a new disease lurking in the cornfields of Illinois and other Midwest states called diplodia. Are you hearing anything, and what is it?
We've heard that. It's a fungal disease on the ear of the corn, and it's may causing some loss of test weight in some cases. It's not a devastating disease, except that it's annoying. If it gets too high of levels, you're going to get some dockage there and that type of thing. So, yes, we are hearing more incidents than usual. These warm temperatures we've had this summer, the rainfall that we had in August, not a good combination for that. So we are seeing more fungal disease for the corn.
The Reuters story quoted one analyst saying it could mean as much as a $2 docking. when they sell it. That wouldn't leave much.
No, that would probably be the extreme case in the context of the percentage of it there. But enough where it would hurt, obviously. Anytime you got corn prices at $3 or right around that area, I think anytime you're knocking off, it doesn't help. So we have not heard extreme levels, but there are pockets, I'm sure, that are out there that are higher than producers would like.
Again, turning to the soybean crop, will they finish corn harvest before they go to beans or vice versa?
You know, that's I was thinking the same thing driving up this morning. That's certainly a possibility in some cases because the beans are not ready. They'll all come ready at once here about that 1st of October as usual. But when that corn is ready, it's dried down and it's, ready to be harvested, guys are going to get after the corn. And I think it could be, in some cases, guys could be done with corn before beans.
As I watch the USDA sales reports, I continue to see China day after day in the market. Is that, to me, that's a little bit of a surprise after what we were talking about last winter when we said, hey, China will slow down. Doesn't appear to have happened.
Yeah, and I think they've used this pullback in the market. The market pulled back here, and now it's actually bouncing up a little bit in the beans. But it gives an indication of how strong that demand is. Not only from China, we're also seeing some good bean sales to other destinations too. So what we're seeing is that protein demand is not only as strong in China, other areas around Asia are really responding, and it means we need to get this big bean crop in the bin. We need to get a big bean crop in South America. But yeah, as far as China is, it may not be quite as robust as what it was last year, but it's still very strong demand.
Looking at South America, will the market activity now have an impact on, because they're into planting season, I think they can now plant soybeans, can't they?
Yes, they have started.
You think it'll have any impact on what Brazilian and Argentine farmers do?
It may. I think in some cases, for example, we're probably going to see more corn acres in Argentina this year with the government backing off the export taxes, the new president coming in. At the expense of beans, they're still going to plant a lot of beans there. I don't want to give your listeners the indication they're just going to, go wholesale into corn. But we may not see the expansion also in Brazil we've seen, got accustomed to the last several years. The aggressive expansion of beans may curtail a bit in Brazil this year.
So as producers take a look at this corn and the soybean crop coming through that auger into the grain wagon, what, if anything, should they be doing in the market right now? Do they sell it out of the field, or what do they do?
One of the things we talked about this week, Orion, is that gross revenue is something we'd encourage your listeners to think about. By that, I mean particularly some of these early bean yields in the areas that are harvesting beans are exceptional.
Yeah.
Exceptional. And when you multiply the bean price, let's say 925 cash beans times 65 or 70 bushel beans, the equivalent is a very high gross revenue relative to their APH. In other words, it would be the equivalent of selling maybe 1150, 1175 beans at your APH. So you just do the math, and what it comes down to is gross revenue. So I'd encourage your listeners to think about that in terms of marketing and what they can do to maybe take advantage of these excessively high or extremely high yields. And I'd encourage the same thing on corn. Think about gross revenue.
Are we going to see 100 bushel soybeans regularly this year?
I wouldn't be shocked. I guess I'm thinking that might be on the high end,
right?
But exceptional bean yields early on here. And again, we don't want to read too much into it. We're less than 10% into the harvest, but a great point. We could see some historically high bean yields.
And while wet weather would be a challenge for farmers, it might help elevators on storage, I would guess, slowing down the delivery.
This could be a really challenging year storage-wise if the weather stays clear. So you make a good point. I think there may be breaks here that will be needed. Otherwise, some of these places could get overwhelmed if they lock in this 200 bushel, 220, 240 bushel corn and then start to see the beans come in on top of that. So, yeah, there'll be some instances of storage space will be a crunch this fall. And so maybe some weather breaks would help.
Any idea on how much whole crop is still sitting in those bins?
I think that there was a larger than normal percentage of old crop corn carried over from last year. I don't think there was many old crop beans carried over. I do think there was some old crop corn carried over. We'll get that in the September 30th grain stocks report from the USDA.
So final question, as you talk to farmers, what seems to be the mood? They love the yields, but price is a concern?
I couldn't have summarized it any better, Orion. The yield is exceptional here. Our producers are very pleased with that overall. like you said earlier, it's not in the bin until it's in the bin. But there is some concern about price. There is some concern about working capital on the farm. There is some concern about going forward into 17, what things look like. So I just encourage your listeners, first of all, first things first, get the crop harvested, focus on that gross revenue, and then move forward from there. But there are marketing tools available that you can use to lock in a floor and leave the upside open.
As always, thank you. A visit with Brian Basting of Advanced Trading, headquartered in Bloomington, Illinois.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
While we are all wrapped up in the campaign to elect a president, there are some situations involving agriculture that we'll be looking at. But before we look at the future, we're going to look back because this session of Congress is coming to an end. What happened on Capitol Hill that impacted agriculture? And whenever we need news from Washington, we turn to our man in the nation's capital, Patrick Hagerty.
We're visiting today with Mike Conaway. Mr. Conaway is the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, and thanks for being with us today. We're going to have a new president come January 20th. We don't know who it's going to be. We might have a Senate controlled by the Democrats. We don't know that. So what are America's farmers and ranchers, what challenges are they going to have next year, and what can the new president and the new Congress do to help them?
Well, the challenges will be the ones that, and by the way, thank you for having me on your program. The challenges will be one they faced for the last 3 years, a 42% drop in net farm income the last 3 years, commodity prices staggeringly low. Article in today's USA Today talks about the eighth month in a row where grocery prices at the grocery stores have fallen, which obviously filters down to the production side of it. So that they'll be coping with that into the next couple of years. Our role, and again, you didn't mention who the next Secretary of Ag will be as well.
Right.
But a lot of new players on that side of on that part of it. The 2018 Farm Bill will have to get done, in my view. We ought to get it done on time. There's no reason to not get it done on time. It'll include the work that will get done on SNAP and as well as the safety net. With respect to the safety net, which farmers are more particularly interested in conservation, the 14 Farm Bill had a lot of new things in it, a lot of new programs. I think the 18 Farm Bill will be more about fine-tuning, trying to find out what works, what doesn't work. We've had some issues with county ARC payments, and we've had dramatic issues with cotton. That program didn't work at all. And so rather than a rewrite of a lot of stuff as we did in 14, I think the work in 18 will be that. But here's why it's important. The current process we have, the current safety net we have in place now, works. And by that, I mean it delivers to the American consumer, the folks who eat groceries, the most abundant, safest, and affordable food and fiber supply of any developed nation in the world. That's what it's currently delivering. You can love it, you can hate it, but it is delivering, and that's demonstrable. Whatever we do to change the system in 18, the metric that I'm going to try to squeeze that through is, what does it do to the price of food? What does it do to that mom who's, listen, the bottom 20% of the economic food chain is paying 30-35% of their disposable income for food? What happens to that mother if we arbitrarily raise the cost of food because we've done something that the high-end consumers want but couldn't care less about the cost of making that happen? You know, those moms and in their circumstances, they use their food budget as the flex. I mean, the house payment doesn't change, rent payment doesn't change, car payment doesn't change. If something happens during the month that they've got to have money somewhere else, then it comes out of the food budget. So whatever we do with the safety net, whatever we do with the Farm Bill in 18, it does not have a deleterious effect on the cost of food, particularly for the folks at the bottom of the food chain.
Well, thank you for your time. Thanks for being with us today, Mr. Chairman. In Washington, Patrick Hagerty.
Next week on The Markets, Patrick Hagerty will talk more with the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, Mike Conaway, and we'll take a look at what might happen after the election in the new session of Congress and certainly a new cast involved in dealing with the agricultural situation. We end this week with the August cattle on feed report. Came up this afternoon, and a huge increase, a four-year high in the number of cattle placed on feed in the feedlots. It's up 15% over a year ago. It topped the average trade estimates, and it's, as I said, the highest for the month in 4 years. Feed yards finally retrieved cattle fattened outside of feedlots for several months on healthy pastures. Less costly corn, also reducing costs for cattle feeders. There were two extra days to process cattle in August than a year ago. So today's report showed August placements at 1,879,000 head. That's up 15% from 1,632,000 last year, well above analysts' average forecast of 1,838,000 head. The government said the number of cattle sold to packers, the marketing category, grew 18% in August from a year ago. And so we're looking at a bigger supply of beef on the market and more downward pressure on prices. And this coming after finally 13 years, China has decided to begin importing some of our beef. They announced this week that they will begin accepting U.S. beef from animals under 30 months of age. So the next step now is for the U.S. Department of Agriculture to work with China's Administration of Quality Supervision, Inspection, and Quarantine to approve the certificates and protocols for exports. But for the first time in 13 years, we will now be able to ship all grades and ages of beef to the People's Republic of China. But China also made news this week by slapping anti-dumping duties on distillers' dried grains, the DDGS. That is part of the high-protein feed ingredient that we get after we process the ethanol. So China now launching an anti-dumping campaign against the United States. So good news and bad news from that major buyer of soybeans and DDGs from here in the United States. The market also this week had to react to weather, soybeans particularly, now that harvest is pretty much underway. Soybean futures fell 2% today to a one-week low on reports of big harvest yields and heavy farmer sales on the cash market. And we're hearing that a pretty good possibility we'll see some 100 bushel per acre soybean crop here in the United States. Soybeans for the week down 1.3%, their third drop in the last 4 weeks. Wheat futures, that contract went up just 0.1% this week. And corn, of course, we're underway with harvest, but not a lot of harvest yet, less than 10% reported in the crop report and the progress report that we got from USDA on Monday. So where will we start the trade on Monday this coming week? Well, the grain market. Totally red screen there today. Everything was lower, so we'll start trading December wheat $4.04 a bushel after it dropped 1.75 today. December corn will start the week at $3.36 a bushel after dropping 1.5. But the big loser today with harvest pressure, November soybeans. It'll start trading Monday at $9.55 a bushel after dropping 23.25 today. Turning to the Mercantile Exchange, the October live hog contract will start the week at $54 after dropping 22 cents a hundredweight today. The October live cattle contract at $107.27 after gaining 25 cents today. September feeder cattle will start the week at $136.82 after dropping 27 cents a hundredweight today. So that's a look back at the week and a look ahead to where we'll be starting trade on Monday. As always, thank you for joining us. I'm Orion Samuelson on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.